You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Today on Happy, Sad, Confused, 2 living legends, Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin, on acting, activism, and their Netflix show. Hey guys, I'm Josh Horowitz. Welcome to another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused, joined as always by another living legend, Sammy Hauer.
Right before you press play, you go, I'm going to die soon. And I wish it had gotten on there. And everyone should know the reason Josh thinks he's going to die soon is because he has a cold.
I've had a cold for like a month. I had the flu. Did you get the flu in this season? We haven't talked in a while.
No, if I had the flu, everyone would know. If I had the flu, there would be like helicopters.
I did think I was going to die for about a day.
But you think that a lot.
No. This was serious. I could not move. It was hot, cold.
Did you cry?
Well, it was hard to differentiate the sweat from the tears.
When you feel so sick that you cry?
No, actually, I don't do that.
Sick.
Well, I guess we have different ways of coping with illness. No, I've been caught. You haven't been caught by the bug?
No. Well, now I am, apparently, after being in here.
I coughed over that microphone that you're talking into.
No, this is Jane Fonda's microphone.
Yes. Welcome back to the show. This week we're back with a vengeance. Took a week off last week because of Los Angeles shenanigans. I was running around. I covered the Golden Globes for MTV. Went to the Critics' Choice Awards because I'm a member now of the Broadcast Film Critics Association.
Critic.
I'm a critic. So that was a lot of fun. But sadly, I didn't have time to record a podcast. But hell, we're back with not one but 2 amazing people.
Yeah.
Jane Fonda, Lily Tomlin
makes
were just
up
here.
for the off week.
Oh my gosh, they were remarkable. They just left here. We should mention beyond their 100 years of amazing work and activism that they have the 4th season of Grace and Frankie coming to Netflix. I believe this Friday, so everybody should check it out. As I mentioned to them, I'm a convert. I just started watching Grace and Frankie. When I booked them, I was like, I better check out the show, and I've watched all 3 seasons. I've started to watch the 4th season. It's a very enjoyable show.
It's like you didn't know if you were having a fever dream or if you were watching Grace and Frankie.
Yeah, part of it was I just couldn't move for much of the time in LA, and I just had to watch something. No, it's a fun show, and it's obviously the 2 of them reteaming after that amazing work in 9 to 5 years ago, and you got Martin Sheen and Sam Waterston. It's a great ensemble and well worth checking out, and not just for old folk. It's for young
for
folk
all of
too.
Us.
Yeah,
they're smoking weed. They're
that's right. They're
having sex.
They are a lot of vibrator talk.
Are you okay?
Not really. No, but the conversation with Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin was amazing. They are 2 icons and willing to talk about anything and everything. And
you could do 2 hours with each one of
I know.
Like a truncated 2 hours with each one of them.
Crazy. So, I mean, yeah, we touch on a lot. We touch on a lot of different aspects of their acting career and their amazing activism over the years and the Time's Up movement and all the stuff that's going on in politics today. A really enjoyable conversation with the 2 of them. And I should mention also, coming later this year, I would recommend this. I got a chance to take a sneak peek at the new Jane Fonda documentary that's going to be debuting at Sundance next week. I believe it's called A Life in 5 Acts, and that's going to be showing up on HBO later this year. Really great film. Same filmmaker that made the Spielberg documentary recently.
Oh.
So really fascinating. And again, like a 2-hour documentary that just scratches the surface of an amazing life. So that's this week's show, Sammy. Are you intrigued?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
You're so lucky. You got to hang out with Grace and Frankie
hashtag
for
blessed.
The morning. Yeah. So did you just tell them about how sick you were the whole time? Or?
No, I decided that was not a good opening gambit to...
After you shake their hands.
No,
you guys get the bug yet?
Not a good opener. Anything new and exciting in your life? I've told you my Globes and Critics' Choice shenanigans.
Yeah. I mean, Will Smith joined Instagram, so that was...
I don't know if I know that.
You're so ignorant. It's amazing.
Is he killing it? Is he already...
It is. It's like The Rock and Hugh put together.
Whoa.
It's amazing.
Really?
Well, like, they each... You know, Hugh's like the perfect dad Instagram. The Rock is just like, you
motivation,
know, motivation
fun,
and fun. And Will Smith is like... Both of those combined. You should have, yeah.
I'm going to give him a follow.
Yeah. Needs your follow. Will Smith needs your follow.
I'm going to toss Big Willie a follow, I think. Yeah.
So that took up most of the time since I saw you last, which was in 2017. So.
Right. Okay. Well, that's good. So 2018 is off to a rip roaring start.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much that and waiting to hear stories about the Globes from you. That was how I waited. That's how I spent my time.
I don't want to make the intro so super long, but I'll mention a couple quick things off the top of my head. I saw our buddy Timmy Chalamet no less than four times in the last week in Los Angeles. The bromance is alive and well. We're doing good.
Thank God. Somewhere Hiddleston's like putting out a hit.
No. He told me that as far as he knows, Ansel does not hate me. I had a conversation with them at the Globes about who was more popular in high school. I'm a little worried that Ansel might hate me now. Ansel, if you're listening, I love you.
Ansel doesn't hate. Ansel could never hate you. Good. Everyone knows that.
But Timothy seems to be having a blast on the award circuit and well-deserved. Met his sister. She was lovely as well. Got a chance to see a lot of the Happy Sad Confused guests in the award season. I saw Armie Hammer.
Can you sit, tell the
what?
The
what?
Hemsworth?
Oh, yeah. I saw Hemsworth. I saw Chris Hemsworth. In brief, I was at the Globes. I got a chance to sit in the show, and I was hanging out, and I saw Chris Hemsworth and Angelina Jolie walk by me as they do.
Right.
You know,
your eyes burn. It's too beautiful. Yeah.
And you know, I have a good relationship with Chris, and he kind of bumped into me inadvertently, and I basically did like the mock joking thing, like, "Hey, man, what the hell's your problem?" And I just saw like Angelina Jolie like flash me like a death look, like. Who is this meager mortal talking to a god like us? And you know, she walked on, but Chris and I had a nice chat. Who else? Yeah, I saw Garrett, who was on the podcast recently. Garrett Hedlund told me all about how the Fantasy Football League players are all up in arms about that expose coming out. Wait, who else did I see that I was going to mention to you? It's going to come to me. Don't worry.
Great.
Next week.
Don't tell me until next week.
Okay, stay tuned for more Golden Globe stories throughout the year. I'm going to parse out every Golden Globe story.
As he remembers them.
In June, there's going to be another story that comes up.
It's going to be a good one, though.
But it was a special night, obviously, with also the Time's Up movement. There was a good atmosphere there and good to see people. Emma Watson was there. Our buddy David Harbour. Spent a lot of time with David. Saw Allison Sudol, who they are now an item. And hot
off the press.
And I got a chance to hang out with them, the two of them, for a bit at the Critics' Choice Awards. That was fun.
I was happy when you told me your wife was there because I was picturing you, like, sitting in between David and Allison, like their kid. Like, guys, how fun is this party?
I would be adopted by them. Why not? Yeah. Oh, and I discovered, last thing I'll say before we're tossing to this wonderful conversation, got a chance to catch up with Allison Brie, and I mentioned to you that Allison and Dave, hey guys.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
This is so exciting.
Allison claims that they enjoy listening to the podcast, sometimes together, sometimes in the car. So if you're driving, pay attention to the road, guys.
Drive carefully. We need you guys.
We need you guys.
treasures.
And please, Allison, Dave, rate, review, and subscribe.
You have to rate, so review, happy. And subscribe.
Just toss us a review in iTunes, would you? Even we need even superstars like you to review the podcast. That's all for
the
preamble.
Can they write it off for their taxes? It's like a charity.
I don't think it works that way.
Yeah.
On to the main event. Jane Fonda, Lily Tomlin, Grace, Frankie.
Woo!
Enjoy. there's no formal introduction. I don't even know how I would introduce Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin, but welcome to my office.
Thank you.
This is such a privilege.
It's a great office for those who can't see it. It's got fabulous posters.
It's got E.T. on top of E.T.
There you go. He's there for comfort.
Yes, looking down
for
on us.
From boy.
Yeah.
And I was just telling you guys for the record, you're here to talk about Grace and Frankie, of course, entering its fourth season. I confess I hadn't watched the show until when I booked you guys. I was like, okay, I've got to go all in. Obviously, I know your careers. And I've watched 41 episodes of your show.
Oh my
last
God.
Week. And I didn't, you know, I could have gone by with a few episodes and gotten the gist, but I legitimately enjoyed the show.
It's a fantastic
piece of work.
Oh, so. Good.
Are you guys surprised that you're enjoying it four seasons in? Are you more surprised that audiences are still into it four seasons in?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like it's that is me in some way, and that is Jane. And of course, we're doing it because that's our lives. That's us. Yeah,
yeah. We're kind of surprised that so many young people like it. You know, I think part of young people. I'm talking like 10-year-olds.
Yeah.
They like to watch it with their parents or grandparents. It kind of bonds them together.
Right.
They cover their eyes about the when the vibrators come on.
Sure, vibrators, the secret word. It happens at least 5 times an episode. Never hurt anybody. It's all good.
But it's such a thrill, you know, to be able to give a face to older women,
yeah.
A face that's funny and yet real, and to have a steady job is
a lot of bonuses to this. I mean, it's funny because, like, you know, growing up, I like many like watched like a show like The Golden Girls, and you think of something like that, which was a fine show in its own right.
Yes,
but. You know, I think of those women on that show, and they seem like twice as old as the ladies that sit in front of me. There's just a different temperament. I don't know if it's the times we live in.
Well, I think the age has been reduced. I mean, 60s like the... I mean, 80s like the new 60 or something, you know, at least.
I'm 4 years older right now than my father was in on Golden Pond.
I thought of that when we
Isn't
when
that
I was
amazing?
Researching. Yeah, you're older than and Catherine in that film.
Oh, I'm about 8 years older than Hepburn was.
Is that mind-boggling to think about?
Because yeah, it is. It really is.
You know, he was in the last
he
you
was
know, years.
Sick.
Yeah,
but she wasn't, and you know, I'm just. Anyway, it's good to be alive and have a good job and have a show that's really popular and that gives hope to people, makes old age look not so bad.
Exactly. When you were in your 20s, what did you think, like what was your notion of someone in their 60s, 70s, or 80s?
Well, I thought they were somewhat advanced, I think I did. My mother had bypass at 70. She lived to be 91, but I thought of her as... I don't know. I think now I'm thinking back, and I didn't think she was. I just thought she had that condition.
Right.
But she was not athletic or anything. She didn't keep herself, you know, physically really able. She was able, but she didn't work at it. She didn't do anything that women have done in the intervening years.
She didn't do the Jane Fonda workout.
No.
And I didn't think I'd make it past 30. I thought I would die of. I don't know, alcohol or drugs and all by myself and alone.
I saw no future.
I saw no future.
Well, is that partially obvious? I mean, for those that don't know, I mean, you lost your mother very early on, tragically.
Right. I had depression.
Yeah.
So the fact that I'm not here and
well,
I'm
how
80.
How old were you when you married Vadim?
23. Well, I started living with him at 23.
Yeah.
But I the fact that I'm 80 and that it's better than I was when I was 20, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when I think of both of your lives and careers, it's you both have been able to, you know, adapt in so many ways to the different the times we live in, to different aspects of pop culture and life. And you when the cliche of thinking about, you know, people that are in their older years is that they're not adaptable, that they can't change, that they're set in their ways. And I feel like you two stand apart from that. Is that fair to say? Do you feel like you're still adaptable, that you still can kind of go the flow and change, or do you feel like you are set in your ways to a degree at this point?
Totally not. I feel like a work in progress. I mean, part of me feels like a newbie. Very, very, very flexible. You know, if you stay curious and you stand up straight, you come across as much younger than you are.
Yeah.
What about Free Willy?
It's true.
It is true.
Yeah, it is.
It is indeed true.
Posture has a lot to do with appearance of young, anyway.
Does work help? You guys stay extraordinarily busy, both in the show. I believe you're still doing, theater. You're doing your one-woman show when you can, right?
Yeah.
Is that something that you find sustains you and keeps, does retirement equal death in some ways to you guys? That you feel like...
Unless you found interest that you were going to do it the same. If you just stopped, I think it would be like a death.
Yeah.
But if you, even if I weren't working in the theater or working in television, if I were doing something meaningful,
yeah,
I would be all that it would be.
Some people retire and they just rewire. They go off into a whole new thing. They join the Peace Corps or whatever. Right. Yeah, I can't even conceive of what retirement would. I'll die with my boots on.
Right. If it's not acting, it'll be more activism. It'll be something else.
Yeah.
It'll be writing. It'll be whatever.
Yeah.
It has to be something. You have to replace that. You have to fill it up with something.
It just will fill up because that's who I am, and you too.
I think so.
Do you remember?
I hope so.
Do you guys have similar temperaments in terms of the way you approach the work? Do you feel like you've brought out different aspects of yourselves in working with each other over the last four seasons of Grace and Frankie? Or,
well, I feel like it's so natural. I can't even think of what I would have done if it weren't with you and the kind of character it is. It's like I say, I feel like it is, like they're living, it's like Ernestine, like an old character I did like Ernestine. Mm. I felt like she lived in the culture. And I feel like those two women live in the culture and you have to check in on them every now and then.
Yeah. I don't think that we're kind of like conscious or self-conscious about methods that are different from each other.
And I've gotten much more in the last few years. Much more just kind of doing it. I guess I've developed to such a point I can just go in and feel like I can do it. And
you don't worry it so much.
Yeah.
I think I've rubbed off on you.
Was that always your...
I thought you were going to say you've worn off on me.
Well, because I co-produced 9 to 5 sure. and hired Lily. And it took a year to convince her to do it.
I was just a hired actress.
It took so long. It was hard to convince her to want to do it. And then after a few days of actually working in it, she wanted to quit because she didn't think she was good. She always worried everything, always worried. I know I'm not. And so, I said, come on, take a leap of faith.
You said that to me way before.
I did.
And then you said it again
at that
time.
You said it
very frequently.
It's how I stay fit. I take leaps of faith.
Literal and
instead
figurative.
Of jumping jacks.
So is that something that sounds familiar to you, Lily, like on every job over the years?
No, I didn't worry this job at all. I haven't. I'm saying in the last several years.
At this point, you're not worried about.
I haven't worried them too much. No.
Is who's more likely? Do you both stick to the page? Do you like to go off and kind of?
Well, we're not. We don't. No.
We're not really. I won't say allowed, but it would just slow things. It would slow things down because they'd be running in there saying, "Look at the word. The words are different than what you're saying."
Right.
But the show's tightly written, and it's, we have certain flexibility, and however we perform it or whatever life we bring to it, we're doing that. We have to behave.
Sure.
I think Lily probably does it more than I do, because comedy is much harder than drama, and there's a certain rhythm, and Lily knows that in her DNA,
right.
And I don't. So I think she's more comfortable being flexible. But, movies are, it's a director's medium, but television is a writer's medium. It's all in the words.
Right.
And so in episodic television, a director will do a scene, and then he'll go back to the video village and talk to the village people and say, how did it go? So they need to give their approval. And if the words aren't right, sometimes they don't give their approval, so...
They've certainly come down and told me, clarified a phrase or...
A word.
Yeah, a word.
since, because you obviously...
Because they built a joke, theoretically. Yeah.
You took quite a break from acting for a while, Jane.
Who, me? Yeah. 15 years. Yeah, I didn't miss it for one moment.
See, so what work were you doing all that time?
I was being wife to Ted Turner.
Uh-oh. So, that's it?
That's
I was
job.
Marinating
that's...
in becoming who I really was. And then I decided that I could go back and find joy, and I did. Monster in Law was my first film back.
Do you find that it's a different kind of a joy? You're taking a different kind?
Totally.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And what,
yeah.
Why do you think that is?
Because I had lost myself. I didn't know who I was, or I was really, really unhappy. Mm. And so with Ted, I kind of got back to myself, and he made me happy.
Do you feel like, Lily, have you ever had to take a break from the job to kind of like... cleanse the palate? Do you feel like that's necessary, or is
I've been forced to take a rest. And
it doesn't look like that according to your resume. It seems like
no,
you've been constantly
doesn't.
Working.
Well, I used to say in the early days when I started out that I always had an act, and that's what kept me off the match game. So, you know, I always had something I could do.
Yeah.
You know, work on material or get booked into some place to do a date. What was that question?
I don't even know. I've lost
taking
it.
Time off.
Yes, thank
oh,
you.
Oh, taking time. No, I don't. I have taken periods where I haven't done anything, worked consciously for 3 or 4 months, maybe.
Months, you see. Yeah, that's different than 15 years.
Oh, I know, but I had to work technically. You know, I'd taken Mark Twain's path, which was to live in a big house, so I'd have a bigger public personality. I had to pay for it.
Sure, sure. Did you have doubts when you came back to acting that you would that muscle had atrophied, that you wouldn't be able to?
No, it's like sex and riding a bike. It comes back if you want to.
Remember when she came in at the Oscars, that first appearance?
That was a moment.
And dazzled the world.
Suddenly the casting directors were like, oh, yeah, Jane Fonda. We need to get her back
and
in
look
movies.
How she looks.
Yeah. No, I did. It was not difficult to come back because I was ready.
Yeah.
And it was a good role and a funny movie that people liked a lot, and it was fun to be outrageous. Yeah. I learned how to do that from 10 years living with Ted.
You talked about how the show has resonated with audiences of different ages. And I think that's definitely true. I mean, do you feel in touch with pop culture of today? Do you feel? I feel like my sense is you guys are actually pretty in touch with 2017, 2018. What year are we at? 2018. See, I don't even know. What are there moments where you feel like I just don't understand what culture is anymore, or do you generally feel like you get it?
Yeah, I think I get it mostly. I don't know that I really know it. I don't know all the bands and stuff like I might have when I was 30.
Mm-hmm.
But I was always sort of, you know, very tunnel visioned in terms of my material and what my sensibility and so on. But I knew how to plug in the culture to all that.
Sure.
And I have grandkids. And it's hysterical riding in a car with my 14-year-old granddaughter because she sings every word to every hip-hop song. You know, and that goes real fast.
Right.
And I just kind of look at her out of the corner of my eye and every single word. It's amazing. So she keeps me up on the music.
Mm-hmm.
And well, my grandson, he's different. He just keeps me straight. But, I'm on social media and stuff like that, and I watch a lot of TV now, which I didn't used to.
You were saying before when we were sitting down, you obviously have seen Call Me By Your Name. You've been catching up on movies. Timothée Chalamet.
Oh, I'm a Girl Scout. I vote in the Oscars, and so does Lily, and we get sent the movies. I see everything.
Can you reveal some of your favorites? I'm just curious.
Let me just say, Phantom Thread. If you is right, it is a masterpiece. It's very subtle. It's all in the small gestures and the silences and the eyes, and you have to pay attention, but it's brilliant. And then the other one is Shape of Water. Also, Call Me By Your Name and Get Out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, these are four of my favorites.
Yeah.
Anything
Mudbound is good.
Yeah. Are there filmmakers that you still would love to work with, do you think?
Paul Thomas Anderson, to me, is a genius.
He's another level.
Just a genius.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He stood by for Altman on, you know.
That's right. Prairie Home Companion.
Prairie Home Companion, yeah.
Oh, that would, oh.
Because Altman had cancer and he was.
He was kind of the backup insurance director.
Yeah, he was just
director,
there. He got it so we could be insured.
Right.
Wow.
Was Altman.
Maya was pregnant. She was in the movie.
Do you consider Altman one of the key collaborators in your career in terms of someone that's...
Yeah, I think absolutely. He gave me my first movie role.
Right.
And that was created a sensation for me because I was... Most people were thinking I was Ernestine from Laugh-In.
And you were nominated.
That's right.
Yeah, and I got nominated, so I automatically got into the Academy.
Yeah.
Right from the start.
Right from the start.
Oh, God, you were so good. I loved that. Loved how you were in that movie.
Well, who do you when you think back to your film career, and there's too many filmmakers to mention, but can you think of one or two that you feel like were the ones that you had most of a kinship with, that you credit most with bringing out the best in you?
Well, you know, what's so great about being an actor is that every director is so, if they're good, they're really different, and they have a different approach, and they cause you to use different muscles that you didn't know you had. But, you know, I made three movies with Alan Pakula, including the first Oscar-winning movie, Klute.
Sure.
So he was very important to me. Hal Ashby directed Coming Home, and I won an Oscar for that, and he was extraordinary. Fred Zinnemann, Julia... Totally different and very brilliant guy. He only would do one or two takes. And I said to Vanessa Redgrave once, how does he do it? And she said, he knows how to cast. He would cast perfectly, and then he'd kind of leave you alone.
Yeah.
That was a gift of Altman's, too, is he could cast.
Yeah.
But those three movies you mentioned, now how did it go? Because I identified immediately.
Klute.
Zinnemann, you tried to get me a part in. And I went to the Emmys that year. Dressed as a 50s movie star.
Was that part of the tactic to get a...
I didn't. I didn't know that Fred Zinnemann would be looking at the Emmys. And I'm sitting there like with my tiaras all cockeyed, you know, and the next day Mr. Blackwell said on Good Morning America, he leaned into the camera, and Lily Tomlin, we do not wear tiaras. But it was just a whole put on for me, and I did it for Altman because I knew Altman would get a kick out of it. And I was going to have, you know, rhinestone eyeglasses and say sunglasses and say some of you will. And I had I had a big fox fur, and I had a dress I got out of the NBC wardrobe with paillettes, silver paillettes.
RuPaul.
RuPaul before time.
There I go again.
So anyway, and I was going to say some of you will think I've gone Hollywood. Anyway, I didn't win, so I didn't get to say that. But then what was the other thing? On Hal Ashby, Jane and I, on first time we went out, we went to see, Harold and Maude.
Oh.
And we saw it. We sat through it twice.
Oh, yes.
So Hal Ashby was just like the end of the world for me at that moment. What was the other movie you said?
Let's see.
Julia Klute.
Klute.
Alan Pakula.
Alan Pakula. He wanted to take, after I did my first Broadway show, appearing nightly, he wanted to go in the studio and just try to film it. And I didn't do it.
Whoa. Is this a regret?
Oh, regret. My heart fell out of my chest when he died.
Yeah.
And that option was just closed to me. And I thought, oh, it makes me cry right now. It was just such a loss.
Yeah, yeah.
I took the opportunity to look at your first collaboration, 9 to 5, which is such a fun movie and amazing to watch today because in some ways it feels extraordinarily relevant.
Oh my god! Yeah.
Which is in some ways kind of depressing because I would think that you probably thought that then surely 35 years hence we're not going to be talking about the same things. Harassment, equal pay, etc. It's a strange marker of the times that
we're still at it.
Yeah.
Yes.
What do you make of that? I mean,
it's a long haul, man. The patriarchy is going to take. It's going to take time, but it's a wounded beast, which means that we've gotten stronger and it's running scared, which means it's very dangerous. But we just have to recognize that we're strong and kill it finally once and for all. Cut its damn throat and do away with it. I mean, we're fighting now for one fair wage.
Right.
You know, 13. 15 million people in the United States work as tipped workers, and they have, and 70% of them are women, and they have three times the poverty rate and more sexual harassment because they have to put up with, they live on their tip, so they're dependent on,
right.
on, you know. But the seven, listen, this is really fantastic to know. In the seven states that don't have a two-tier system where tipped workers earn the same minimum wage as everybody else plus tips, sexual abuse was cut in half.
Well, there you go.
See, when there's economic parity, women don't have to put up with it. So that's what we're working on.
And then slowly those male restaurant owners are disappearing from the earth. They're just falling into a puddle of despair.
Like dinosaurs, yes. And there's some good ones that are rising up that do treat their workers well.
Was parity in pay among your male co-star something you were aware of?
No.
At the time, like, do you think you were making the same as Redford, et cetera?
I thought I'd had so little value, I didn't pay attention. If I had found out that I earned less, I would have thought, well, that's just because I'm worth less.
Aww.
It never would have occurred to me.
And that speaks volumes. You, who is so has so much self-worth, even you, it wouldn't even occur to you.
That's very recent. That's why I like being 80 so much, because my self-worth is very recent. But, you know, now I would pay attention.
Yeah.
But you know, and I made sure Robert and I earned the same amount in the last movie we made. But before then, no, I didn't pay attention. Did you?
Yeah, but I wasn't a big enough star to, a movie star to demand. I would have been conscious that I know you made more money than I did on 9 to 5. On the back end.
Well, I was
but
the producer.
You deserved it. You were the producer. You struggled for that story, et cetera, et cetera.
Different considerations.
That's right. And so I have those considerations.
We all earned the same salary. I know we did.
In terms of the acting fee?
Yeah, the acting fee.
Well, there you go.
No, I just brought that up. I was trying to.
She's being
I feel
funny.
Like there's dirty trying laundry that you're trying. Just... I feel like there's a wedge in the relationship that has just come up. Sorry, guys, no season 5 of Grace and Frankie. We had a good run.
No, wait, I was going to tell you something. It was something or other. We started a little fracas when we were doing Grace and Frankie because.
What do you mean, we? You did.
Well, you were sitting right along there going along with
it. It was
your
joke. Say what you said.
What did I say? I said someone, the New York Times asked me if I, something about my check or my salary or something, right? I said, I was pretty happy with my check until I found out that Sam and Martin make the same as we do. And
right.
We're the leads of
Frankie,
the series.
Yeah.
And so that just ahead of the Me Too and the drop them or whatever the them is.
You started it
Time's
all.
Up.
Time's up.
Drop them is a good one too, though. Another
Time's
good
up. Yeah, just before we actually probably preceded that
we preceded
fermented.
You could definitely make
anybody
that,
that preceded us is dead.
The Time's Up movement, which is remarkable. I mean, I was at the Globes. I was working the carpet. It was great to see sort of that
wasn't
wonderful.
Wasn't it great?
It was actually a beautiful...
And celebratory.
It was. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's really... It's been a fascinating time the last few months since this, like, one thing, you know, the Harvey Weinstein thing. It just starts everything off. I'm just curious, does it make you reevaluate and think back to your own relationships on set? The things that you saw, the people that you interacted with, you know, people. Some people will make the argument, "Oh, it was a different time, etc." What do you make of it? Like when you think back to your own career and your own experiences about the things that you saw and experienced.
Well, I didn't, I didn't experience so much. I mean, I had enough of, you know, the BS with. Like a producer, if he's a good friend, we'd be laughing, talking about something. And he might grab my arm and pull me down on his lap and kind of give me a big bear hug, kind of. You know, nothing too too offensive. But I knew it could have led to anything.
Sure.
And I would just say, you know, cut it out, you know, and all that stuff. And I would just... And I never noticed other people on the set who might be going together or have their eye out on somebody. Except you, I've noticed.
Well, you can't ignore it. You can't miss it.
No, I got fired when I was a secretary. I got fired because I wouldn't sleep with a boss. And then once a French director, this was like my fourth movie, you know, he said, the character has an orgasm and I have to see what your orgasms are like. And I just laughed.
That's pretty blatant.
Pretended I didn't. But aside from that, I didn't run into it, no. But, yeah. You know, I've been involved in the Time's Up organizing and a lot of the meetings, and it's just amazing what these women have gone through.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I mean, do you have sympathies? Or it's a complicated subject, obviously, to say the least, when you think back to, like, because we're going back decades in some of these, like, things that have come up, whether you do the Dustin Hoffman stuff, Woody Allen stuff, who you've worked with, Lily, you know, keeps coming back around. Do you feel like all this needs to be looked at with certain different contexts? There are obviously different behaviors. It's not all, you can't put it all under one umbrella, but certainly there is a culture that needs to change. That's for sure.
And it's been around for, you know, centuries. Is this millennia?
Yes, it didn't start with movies.
And it's much worse in other industries.
Yeah.
And you know, I do agree that we have to differentiate between joking around innocently and right. something that's offensive. But we also have to understand that what may not be offensive to me could turn another woman over the edge, you know, could flip another, you know. People have to realize that when a woman is sexually abused, it can be life-altering, mm-hmm. and you can spend the entire rest of your life trying to heal from it. It's not a joke, and it's not to be taken lightly.
Absolutely.
And I think what's happening is a real turning point and very, very important. And as time goes on, I think we're going to make it much easier for men to understand what's acceptable and what's not. I mean, time's up. I think the next meeting is devoted to men, helping men kind of understand the playing field,
this, yeah.
which I think is great because we all love men, and you know, we're going to need to have men on our side.
Right.
You know, it's a small planet and too many of us, and we have to learn to be nice to each other because we need each other.
I'm curious, you know, we kind of alluded to this a little bit, but do you remember like when you felt like you had a voice on set that you felt entitled to kind of speak your mind? On a film set, or I mean, you know, you were generating a lot of your own material, so it might have been a little bit different for you, Lily. I'm not sure, but I mean, in terms of when you felt you had agency to make your argument, to go to
when I started producing my own movies, mm-hmm. with 9 to 5 and China Syndrome and Coming Home, those movies, then I started to feel agency. But I was in my late 40s by then.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, when I'm patting myself on the back, and I don't really mean to. It's like I didn't have the concept of the system working a certain way. Like when the first national job I had was on the Gary Moore show when he made a comeback, and he failed. He was canceled mid-season. But on Smothers Brothers replaced him because he was like an old gasp of the old variety show.
Right.
And I had been tapped to go on that show, and I just fought with the writers, the material. I was more concerned always about the sensibility of what was being presented. And I would go up to the writer's office and I'd say, you can't do this. This is just awful. This is blah, blah, blah. And they'd bring in some actress to do a bit, and I'd hear her laboring over this material
yep.
for hours, and then they'd drop it. They wouldn't even do it, you know. And I'd go and I'd say, see, look what you put. It would be like the one who had the thing about the girls' boarding school, Charlotte Ray. Look what you put Charlotte Ray through for hours trying to make that material work, and then you just drop it. You're just sending her home, and she's not going to have the job or anything. And then I got canceled after the third episode. But and then I did that always. I mean, even on something like All of Me, which I wanted to change Steve's tie in a scene. I didn't like the tie. I was just outspoken about yeah. stuff, and I think that's what kept me from any kind of sexual harassment too.
There's filmic evidence of the infamous, and I love it, one of my favorite viral videos. You and David O. Russell going toe to toe.
Yeah, I mean, it's true.
They're friends now.
I know.
We are. We were friends that day, but
well, you clearly speak his language. He's and I've interviewed him.
I've interviewed him
many, yeah. many times, and look, many great actors love the way he works, and clearly
I do. Yeah.
Is that infamous crazy video, which again
I've forgotten about that, you know.
I don't think
it's
so.
Quite a few years ago. I did kind of forget about it.
But is that like when you saw that video? I'm curious from your perspective, Jane, being a friend of Lily's. Like, is that a familiar kind of scene for you on a set? Have you
totally not
really?
I'm not a conflict person. Mm-hmm. I have a really hard time. I don't like conflict.
Yeah. Yeah, it's curious. I should mention also, I got a chance to watch the new documentary about you.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
Which is,
What did you think?
I thought it was fascinating. I mean, I know a great deal about your life, but to see it kind of encapsulated in that way, and the structure is fascinating, uh-huh. too, in that I believe it's a life in
five acts.
And it's curious. I mean, this is going to be a documentary that's screening at Sundance. I'll be there. I know you're going to be there. And it's going to be shown on HBO, I think, later this year.
Yeah.
Because it's very much about you being defined by
men.
The men in your life, at least to a certain point.
Yeah.
And that's again, fascinating, given what we've talked about, and you've been pretty open, and that it took you a while to kind of, like...
Come into my own,
come
yeah.
Come into your own,
right.
yeah.
And the men helped me.
Yeah, in different ways,
yeah.
obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that something... Have you watched the documentary yourself?
Not
yet?
Since it's finished. It's so hard. Oh my God, it's so hard because it's not entirely flattering.
Well, I mean, both of you, in kind of researching, you know, like what to talk about with you guys, it was almost like overwhelming for me because I feel like I could talk about anything with you two. Partially because you've lived so many different lives, fascinating lives, but also because you're both kind of, it seems like open books. You're willing to kind of go anywhere. For you, like when you did the documentary, are there aspects of your life that you still feel are tough for you to talk about?
Right, so I'm not going to talk about it.
Well, I'm not going to ask you about it. But I'm curious, like, what
yes.
I mean, is it because you're talking about very intimate things in the documentary in terms of your father and marriages that didn't work or did work. Is that part of the therapy to kind of like talk about this stuff?
I think the reason that I do it is because I found a way to do it that is helpful for other people. It's almost like it's somebody outside of me.
Right.
And I try to turn my life into a lesson of things to avoid or thing to embrace or what I've learned. And, you know, it's why my memoir was so successful is
right.
because it really spoke to a lot of people, including men,
yeah.
and helped them understand their own lives. That's the only reason I do it.
I think I'm not sure if you said it in the doc or something else I said, but you at some point talked about your father having regrets
yes.
At the end of his life.
And I don't want to die with regrets, so I'm trying to live in a way that will minimize them.
Yeah. I mean, as you guys sit here today, I mean, are the regrets that you have, when you think about them, are they personal ones or are they professional ones or a mixture
of them? Personal. I mean, God, you know, you're lying on your deathbed. You're not going to think about professional.
The job you turned down.
No. Or the stuff you didn't buy or any of that. It's
right.
all... Do my kids really love me? Was I a good enough parent?
Yeah.
You know, did I leave the world a little bit better than before? You know, and things like that. Also,
yeah.
because I sort of feel that the answers to those questions determine whether you survive on any energetic level afterwards.
Mm-hmm. That's legacy. That's
yeah,
yeah. I mean, for you, Lily, in a different way, and you kind of alluded to this. Like, it seems like a lot of the way you've approached life has been. You haven't overthought it. Like, you've just sort of, like, charted your own path in a way. Like, this seems right to talk to, interact with people the way I do, to create the way I do. Let's not overthink. It's kind of, it's almost in contrast to Jane in some ways, in that I feel like you've lived a life that you've examined very deeply.
It's very intentional, yeah.
So I that's why I've adopted her life. I could just jump right to the point she's achieved. And
there, skip all the messy
all
stuff.
All the work.
But I mean, it's curious. I mean, obviously, because you know, you've been open in your personal life, and you and your wife Jane, who have been together over 40 years. I mean, you were never really, for instance, in the closet, right? You were just didn't. There was never a proclamation. It just you lived your life, and the people close to you knew. But you never made a secret of the way you.
Some people thought I was gay. I never said, "Well, I'm not gay."
Yeah,
and. In fact, I think I recall you, I was in San Francisco, and it was like, it was after you'd seen me on Appearing Nightly, because I did that bit in Appearing Nightly where I do the heterosexual interview, and I play both parts, or I can't remember how I did it, but It's on one of my record albums, mm-hmm. and the person says, "Lily, oh, I play the interviewer," and she's like talking kind of like this. Anyway, she says, "Lily, what was it like to see yourself on the screen making love to a man?" And I said, "Oh gosh, you know, I've seen these women all my life. I know how they walk. I know how they talk." Some people said I went too far. Some think I didn't go far enough. Blah, and it goes on and on like that. And all I had done was I took Cliff, what's his name? He was in Boys in the Band. He was straight.
Okay.
And he flipped. He told every interview he did. This was way back in the days of Boys in the Band, and he tried to make everybody know he was straight.
Right.
So you turned that on its head. Yeah. I just turned it on its head. And
I mean, did you feel like that was? Did people try to exert influence on you over the years and like, quote unquote, outing you and thinking?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. Some people. I can name famous people who did. If I could remember their names. you know, the woman who wrote, and I've never met her, but and I would like to have met her and everything. And in later years, I would really have liked to have met her. She wrote always in, you know, like E.E. Cummings in The Village Voice, you know, okay. Lowercase, no punctuation. Mm-hmm. And when I first started going out with, when I first was with Jane, we became a couple very quickly. And she called me up and threatened me on the phone, called me at Jane's apartment and threatened me and said, "We're going to, you know, I'm going to do this to you and I'm going to do that if you don't come out, if you don't make a statement, if you don't do this." And it was like 1971 or something. And I said, "First of all, you will get nowhere with me by threatening me." You know, I was just really pissed off. And so there have been a lot of people like that over time.
Yeah.
And then they had the outing thing where people would send you cards on October 11th, you know, mm-hmm. That you should be out. And
why October 11th?
I don't know. I forget why.
The anniversary of Stonewall or something?
No, I don't think it is. No.
So
I don't know why it got picked.
It's curious because, I mean, we all...
11 is my lucky number.
Oh, there you go.
Well.
Because there's a lot to be to pull your hair out about nowadays, clearly. But the advancement for the LGBTQ community is something to point to as progress. I mean, are you heartened? Are you surprised sort of like where you were in your life in your 20s to see sort of where that community lives
today? I'm totally amazed at the gay community, that they've made what kind of progress they've made. It's just been, of course, there's a lot of smart people who are gay. And a lot, and there are people, mostly men, who, through the years, they had the wherewithal. They were more professional, and the women were much lower, you know, scale, downbeat, down whatever that phrase is, down socially downward,
mm-hmm.
mobile,
sure,
immobile.
We're just gonna throw a lot of words out. We'll figure it out.
Because women couldn't work or make that kind of money. They'd have to, unless they were professional, and fewer women who were gay were had professional jobs at that point.
Yes.
But and it's, you know, the gains that have been made are life-saving. I spent 20 years living in Georgia and, you know, teens killing themselves. And
right.
It's just, it's so, so important what's happening.
You know, I'm sitting in front of two fantastic activists. What do you lose sleep over in 2018? What do you lose sleep over nowadays? I mean, it's hard to kind of figure out the one issue to be most up in arms about.
The Earth is collapsing.
The planet
that'll do
is.
It, yeah.
I mean, that's...
And nobody, and they're, it's not even in the news. I mean, it's so minimally mentioned. Of course, Trump is such a distraction. He keeps... He does broken field stride. I feel like he's conscious of everything he does and that he's totally distracting one week so that he's doing some stuff behind the scenes under during that week, and then he comes out with another big
But alongside unabashed. Every single thing that happens, we have to be aware that the Earth is dying and that it's a race against time. Because at a certain point, it doesn't matter what happens. We're going down. You know, the stuff we saw, the fires, the floods, the earthquakes, all of that is just the beginning.
Yeah,
it's going to get much worse, and we have to try to stop it while there's still time. But as an American, what I lose sleep on is I feel that our democracy is being stolen from us. And we have to fight like hell, and I'm pretty optimistic that we can.
I will say, I mean, because, you know, I grew up, you know, I'm a you know, cliched, like, you know, Upper West Side liberal from Manhattan. My wife works for
me. Well, don't be liberal. Be radical.
Well, there you go. That's what I was going to say, is frankly, the election radicalized me.
A lot of people.
I think so, right?
People like, who'd never considered themselves to be activists.
Because it felt like now or never, like, the stakes have just gone as high as they get.
Right.
It's a,
well, there's, as Jerry Brown puts it, you know, Trump's negative energy is coming at you, and that releases positive energy. And there's a lot of positive energy that's been released. We just have to, you know, be sure it's channeled to constructive uses, you know, like organizing in the grassroots and winning back the House, the Senate,
absolutely,
governors.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, you know, you've both had remarkable, you know, take away all the acting and everything else, you've lived amazing lives of activism, and you were a full-time activist for a long while, Jane. I mean, what would you say to, you know, someone in their 20s or 30s to, like, what do you do to kind of, like, channel?
Find out what's going on in your area. What are the on-the-ground organizations that are actually
making a difference? You could go to the Women's March on the 20th.
There you go.
But we have to do more than march. I mean, we have to resist and say no, but we also have to, if we're going to win, we have to say yes to things. And yes, we have to know what kind of a society we want.
Yeah.
And I think it has to be, you know, more empathic and compassionate and less militaristic.
Absolutely. And we have to save the planet.
Could be completely void of any militaristic shenanigans.
Yeah.
Gone. Do away with.
Lightening it up, putting a bow on this wonderful conversation,
okay,
because that's all very important, but not as important as Grace and Frankie season 4, obviously, which is the most important thing.
I'll tell you one thing. It's a lot easier being an activist with a hit series behind you.
I would think.
Oh. I mean, when we go out together on our dog and pony show, it's pretty great. People love it. She was a waitress, you know, so we talk about waitressing and...
Is that right?
Sure.
Could you still be a waitress today? Do you feel like you still have the skills?
Oh, yeah, sure. No question.
What can't you do now that you miss being able to do 30, 40 years ago? Is there anything?
Just not get up in the morning when I have to go to work at 5.
Is that your call time? They're so brutal.
5.
Why would they do that to you?
They ought to get an early... I have to get an early start on makeup and hair. I have that, like, a funny thing. I have that big hair, you know, that I wear. And Jane says, your agent, that
it
hair.
It needs its own agent.
Do you become less self-conscious about that kind of stuff at a certain point, or more self-conscious about the...
What kind of stuff?
Well, the appearance. Can you ever let that go in a certain degree? I mean, you're in an industry that is all about that, unfortunately. But I would hope that... With age also comes a little self-acceptance.
Yeah, I can't.
Don't touch me.
No, I announced earlier this week or this morning or something, I announced that I was going to slowly start not wearing makeup.
Yes.
Any makeup.
Why not?
Well, you have to wear a little something for camera, like maybe a little base.
A tip to the actors out there. Go with the base. Don't overdo it.
Yeah. Follow along with Frances McDormand. And I saw Shirley MacLaine at the Globes. I don't think she had any makeup
on. Yes, she did.
Well, maybe base.
No, she had makeup on.
She did not have her eyes delineated.
Well, okay. Anyway, my attitude about it, you know, it's very hard because we both kind of grew up in the 50s. But, you know, I was very much a... Sort of, it was drilled into me that if I didn't look perfect, I wouldn't be loved. But now that I'm right smack dab in the middle of oldness, I will say that if something goes wrong, it's like, eh. I mean, like, I've had a cancer removed from my lip.
Right.
You know, listeners, I'm sitting here with bandages on my lip. I was on The Tonight Show last night with Lily with bandages on my lip. What's a lip in the scheme of things?
There you go.
Right.
Well, if you're right in the middle of a big smooch.
I'm not smooching anymore, except with my dog.
You've given up on smooching, I hear.
Well, you know, maybe when my lip heals, just smooching. I'll go back to middle school.
Right. First base.
Kissing is the best anyway, isn't
it? Yeah.
Oh, God.
I just love her.
mean, it is. Has this strengthened? It has to have strengthened the relationship. You knew each other very well for decades, and you only collaborated once on a wonderful film.
But we did a lot of tributes. I mean, mostly I tributed her.
And I tributed her, too, and once we did activism twice. Together and stuff.
Or she did a favor for me. She'd come and be interviewed at the Gay Center we have different programs that we trying to always sell to cable.
But I don't know whether I could survive the hours and the work if it wasn't for working with her.
Yeah.
I mean, I look forward to she is a hoot. And, I'm kind of a downer, so to be with somebody who just... Someone asks a question, her answer is always funny. And so I'm trying to learn to do that. And I'm getting better at it because of her.
Oh, she's very funny.
Every now and then.
She got off a great line on
the Today Show.
Today Show, and then she got off a good line here. With several.
I think there were a few,
Yeah, there were, but she did one very kind.
But she I'm
before.
Learning from watching her.
Some I've heard.
She delivers it as if it's
some
the first time.
She's heard me say. But but you did say one good, really sharp thing.
Today?
In this performance.
We'll do the postmortem on it and we'll evaluate. I think you guys get a B+, A-, maybe even an A. I don't know. You did really well.
Well, I probably hovered at a C.
No.
Her grade brought me up.
You were at least a B+.
Impossible. Impossible.
You were an A+, sir.
Oh, that's very sweet of you to say. I was not, I don't get nervous often. I've had a lot of pretty amazing performers on this show. But to talk to one of you is intimidating. To talk to the two of you, it's kind of overwhelming.
I think that would be more warming. And
well, it's more of a conversation. I can let you two banter and I'll sit back and enjoy.
Yeah.
That part is fun.
We should use that. If people get nervous with us, we should use that. Negotiating and stuff.
Yeah. There's nothing I can provide you with besides, water.
Negotiating.
Like for more money and stuff. We should go in together and be intimidating.
Well, I've told you that. My God.
Yeah. But, yeah. I mean, him saying it kind of means more to me.
Oh.
Wow. I take that as the highest possible compliment.
I mean, look at all the names on the board there that he's interviewed here.
Calm down. None bigger than you two.
I can see that, actually.
See, she's killing me.
When's the last time you were intimidated by somebody, Jane? Do you get nervous in any situation at this point?
I can't remember. Not lately.
Well, that's not because you haven't been intimidated.
Oh,
that's
I've been
because
very
you can't
intimidating.
Remember.
I just can't remember. I'm old. That's
what
right.
About you, Lily? Does that ever happen to you? Do you find yourself
intimidated?
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah, but mostly because I don't really take the forefront.
What does that
sort
mean?
Of a footnoter.
She's willing to be the second banana and jump in with a good line. Is that what we're talking about?
I don't know. I have no. I don't.
All I know is that as we've been going to all these shows and looking at clips. Every clip, you have the funny line, and I'm going to talk to the writers about it, because it's really obvious when we look at clips.
No, I don't think it's the lines. I think it's sort
well,
of
well, you know how to deliver.
Reaction.
No, it's you always have the good lines, plus don't. Your reaction. I mean...
So we can't diminish the straight man. There's nothing, you need the straight man.
Right.
To have the counterbalance.
Yes. I said to someone just last night, I said, Jane and I could become the next Dan Rowan and Dick Martin. Of course, she would be Dan Rowan, and I would be Dick Martin.
Laughing for 2018, reborn.
That's
very
right.
Exciting.
Abbott and Costello is better. I'd like to, who's
well,
on first?
One of us is going to have to put... Well, one of... I don't want to be the one that has to put the weight on.
Fair enough. It's been such a pleasure and such an honor. I can see you're still taking in the office.
I'm reading all your names.
Please enjoy. You're welcome to stay here.
I'm trying to fundraise in New York, so I'm looking at all the people there. It's true. But
which cause needs the cash? Time's
one
up.
Fair wage.
Of one fair wage.
Yeah.
Okay.
See,
that's
something so simple, kind of fundamental, and it will make a huge difference.
Oh, it would be. And Cuomo says he's going to bring it to New York, Governor Cuomo, and he's going to have a lot of pushback from the National Restaurant Association, the other NRA.
Right.
And so we have to be sure that we really, support him and push him to do it, because it would be historic.
Absolutely, absolutely. This sadly wraps up your New York leg of the Grace and Frankie tour. I hope you've had a good time. New York has been important in both your lives.
Yes, it has.
Fond memories?
Yes, I was born here.
There you go.
Yeah.
I wasn't born here, but I came here from Detroit.
And she was she was a waitress at Howard Johnson's.
Oh, I miss Howard 49th Johnson's.
49th and Broadway. They got torn, you know, got closed down.
She announced that she was the waitress of the week, month.
Yeah, I would duck down behind the counter, you know. I was always mischieving.
That doesn't sound like you.
But I wore my uniform regulation and all that. So I always had a little paper hat on and a hairnet.
I think he's trying to get rid of
us. No,
you just have too many talents to talk about. I mean, we can talk about your waitressing the next time. Let's save it for season 5, Grace and Frankie.
We'll do it. It's a deal. Give me 5.
All right.
Okay.
Good to see you guys. 5's all around. Grace and Frankie, season 4, this Friday. Check it out on Netflix. Jane Fonda, Lily Tomlin, thanks for stopping by today.
Thank you. See you in Sundance.
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pressured to do this by Josh.